यशोदानन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रजजनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरावानचारी चमन तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय पंचतत्व 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 जय पंचतत्व जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद
शुभार प्रणाम से पूर्व राज्य कचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमारी जवाइन गए से इस भक्ति नाथ स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की कर्णंतराशि मन भाव गताम की समीर गौर भक्त वृंद की प्रभुपाद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ओम अज्ञान तिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादं सहगनललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते कोपेश गोपिका कांता राधकांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरंगी राधिवृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे This morning, a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Amshuman, Text 18 to 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Read the preceding verses from 18 onwards. Tathasudasasat putra damayanti patir nripaha ahur mitra saham yamvai kalma shangrim utak vachit vashishta shapad raksho bhut anapatya svakarmana. Sarvakama had a son named Sudasa, whose son, known as Saudasa, was the husband of Damayanti. Sudasa is sometimes known as Mitrasaha or Kalmashapada. Because of his own misdeed, Mitrasaha was sonless and was cursed by Vishishta to become a man-eater, Rakshasa. Shri Raju Vacha Kim Nimitto Guru Shapa Sudasasya Mahatmanaha Etadvetitumichama Katyatam Naraho Yadi. King Parikshit said, O Shrigadeva Goswami, why did Vishishta, the spiritual master of Sudasa, curse that great soul? I wish to know of this. If this is not a confidential matter, please describe it to me. Shri Shuka Uvacha Sudaso Mrigayam Kinchich Charan Raksho Jaganaha Mumucha Bhrataram Sotha Gada Pratikshikirshaya Sanchintayan Nagham Nragya Sudarupa Dharo Grihe Gurave Bhoktukamaya Bhaktva Ninya Naramisham. Shukadev Goswami said, once Sudasa went to live in the forest, where he killed a man-eater Rakshasa, but forgave and released the man-eater's brother. That brother, however, decided to take revenge. Thinking to harm the king, he became the cook at the king's house. One day, the king's spiritual master, Vishishta Muni, was invited for dinner, and the Rakshasa cook served him human flesh. Parivekshyamanam Bhagavan Vilokya Bhakshyamanjasa Rajanam Sapat Kruddho Raksho Hyevam Pavishyasi. While examining the food given to him, Vishishta Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that it was unfit to eat, being the flesh of a human being. He was very angry at this and immediately cursed Sudasa to become a man-eater. Rakshakritam tadviditva chakredvadashavarshikam Sopyapor jilim adaya gurum shaptum samudyataha varito madayantyapo rushati padayor jahau dishakham avanim sarvam pashyan jiva mayam nripaha. When Vishishta understood that the human flesh had been served by the Rakshasa, not by the king, he undertook 12 years of austerity to cleanse himself for having cursed the faultless king. Meanwhile, King Sudasa took water and chanted the Shapa mantra, preparing to curse Vishishta. But his wife, Madayanti, forbade him to do so. Then the king saw that the 10 directions, the sky and the surface of the globe, were full of living entities everywhere. Rakshasam bhavan apanna pade kalmashatam gataha vivaya kale tadrishe vanauko dampati dvijau. Sudasa thus acquired the propensity of a man-eater and received on his leg a black spot for which he was known as Kalmashapada. Once King Kalmashapada saw a Brahmana couple engaged in sexual intercourse in the forest. Kshudharto jagrihe vipram tatpatya yaha kritardhavat nabhavan rakshasas sakshat ikshvakunam maharataha madayantya patir vira nadharmam kartumarhasi tehi me patika maya akritartam patim dvijam. Being influenced by the propensity of a rakshasa and being very hungry, King Sudasa seized the Brahmana. Then the poor woman, the Brahmana's wife, said to the king, O hero, you are not actually a man-eater. Rather, you are among the descendants of Maharishi Ikshvaku. Indeed, you are a great fighter, the husband of Madayanti. You should not act irreligiously in this way. I desire to have a son. Please, therefore, return my husband, who has not yet impregnated me. Text 28. Deho yam manusho rajan. Deho yam manusho rajan purushasya khilarthada purushasya khilarthada tasmadasya vado vira Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vata uchyate. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vata uchyate. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Matsthanasya vado vira. Deho yamanusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Mataji. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Deho yam manusho rajan. Purushasya khilarthata. Tasmadasya vado vira. Sarvartha vado uchyate. Deha. Body. I am this. Manusha. Human. Rajan. O king. Purushasya. Of the living being. Akhila. Universal. Arthada. Beneficial. Tasmat. Therefore. Asya. Of the body of my husband. Vadaha. The killing. Vira. O hero. Sarva artha vadaha. Killing all beneficial opportunities. Uchyate. It is said. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O king, O hero, this human body is meant for universal benefits. If you kill this body untimely, you will kill all the benefits of human life. Please repeat. O king, O hero, this human body is meant for universal benefits. If you kill this body untimely, you will kill all the benefits of human life. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Hari Hari Bifale Janama Koinu Manushya Janama Paya Radha Krishna Na Bhajiya Janiya Shuniya Bishakainu. The body of a human being is extremely valuable because in this body one can understand the instructions of Krishna and attain the ultimate destination of the living entity. The living entity is within this material world to fulfill the mission of going back home, back to Godhead. In the material world, one hankers for happiness, but because one does not know the ultimate destination, one changes bodies one after another. However, if one gets the opportunity to possess a human form of body, in this body he can fulfill the four principles of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And if one is properly regulated, he makes further progress after liberation to engage in the service of Radha and Krishna. This is the success of life, to stop the process of repeated birth and death and go back home, back to Godhead, Mam Eti, to be engaged in the service of Radha and Krishna. Therefore, taking a human body is meant for completing one's progress in life. Throughout human society, killing of a human being is taken very seriously. Hundreds and thousands of animals are killed in slaughterhouses, and no one cares about them. But the killing of even one human being is taken very seriously. Why? Because the human form of body is extremely important in executing the mission of life. O king, O hero, this human body is meant for universal benefits. If you kill this body untimely, you will kill all the benefits of human life. The chapter is entitled The Dynasty of Amshuman. So Shukadeva Goswami is describing the various descendants in this dynasty, and whenever some particularly illustrious king is mentioned or interesting story comes up, then he expands on that. Otherwise, previously we've seen some chapters have just been lists of names. In this case, Maharaj Parikshit has asked a question: what was the story behind this Maharaj Sodasa being cursed by his spiritual master Vasishta? Sometimes we wonder why these descriptions are there in Bhagavatam, lists of kings, just various names that don't seem very interesting. But actually, this is one of the lakshanas of a Purana. One of the characteristics of a Purana is that the vamsha has to be described. The descendants of the king, the different lineages, are to be described. So this is a reason. This is Srimad Bhagavatam is also known as Bhagavad Purana. So therefore, these lists are given. But because Bhagavatam is the topmost Purana, only the stories that are more related to Krishna or more spiritual lessons can be extracted from them, those ones are expanded upon. For example, in yesterday's verse, there was the reference to Rituparna and Nala. So King Nala is, and the story of Nala and Damayanti, a different Damayanti from the Damayanti in this story. And this king's wife is sometimes called Damayanti, sometimes called Madayanti. Interesting. But the previous verse, the different Damayanti and Nala is a very long story, involved story, and it's described in Mahabharata. Actually, when the Pandavas lost their kingdom through the gambling match, then when they went to the forest, one of the sages met them and told him, Yudhishthira Maharaj, that you don't have it so bad. Do you know what happened to Nala and Damayanti? He also lost his kingdom and everything through gambling, through being cheated in gambling. So he told this very long involved story. It's full of intrigue, suspense, cheating, romance, violence, and it's all described in Mahabharata. But in Bhagavatam, that whole story is not even, it's just very briefly mentioned that this king Rituparna was a friend of Nala, and he taught him the art of gambling, and Nala, in exchange, taught the other king how to control horses. But in Mahabharata, this story is expanded on very greatly, and it's a very popular story in Indian culture. But in Bhagavatam, just gives it a very brief reference. So in this purport, it actually mentions how the human form of body can fulfill the four principles, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So we know in Mahabharata, actually, those principles are described, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And therefore, it's very dear. In the Bhagavatam earlier, it's described, Mahabharata is very dear to the Brahma Bandhus, the Shudras, people who are attracted by these kinds of stories, exciting stories. They're more interested in Mahabharata. But Bhagavatam focuses on the purely spiritual aspect. Therefore, Bhagavatam is known as Amala Purana. Shrimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Very dear to the Vaishnavas. Not just Amala Purana, it's also called the Amala Pramana. Amala Purana and Amala Pramana. So Amala Purana obviously means the spotless. Amala means dirt. Amala no dirt, pure Purana, and also Amala Pramana. Pramana means evidence or proof. So it's also the topmost evidence. So some of these stories in different Puranas are mentioned in different ways, and it can be a little bit confusing, you know, what's the real story? So as Vaishnavas, followers of Bhagavatam, we should be faithful to the Bhagavatam version. Sometimes the other Puranas are useful to fill out some of the details. For example, in this very interesting story of Maharaj Saudasa, you know, he was a king and he killed a Rakshasa. Different Puranas give different versions of how that happened, why that happened. But they agree that the Rakshasa transformed himself, the surviving Rakshasa, the brother of the killed Rakshasa, he wanted to take revenge on the king. So therefore he pretended to be a cook, changed his form to be a Brahmana cook, and he engaged in the service of the king. And Vishishtamuni was served human flesh as a meal by this Rakshasa cook. So Vishishtamuni, because the king had invited him, Vishishtamuni cursed the king to become a Rakshasa for 12 years. Then he understood that actually it wasn't the king's fault, so Vishishtamuni himself undertook penances to purify himself of that offense. So Maharaj Parikshit was interested to hear more about this story, so he asked Shukadeva Goswami for more details. Then the king felt, you know, I've been unfairly cursed, I'm going to take revenge on Vishishtamuni. So he took the water in his hands, he chanted the mantras even to curse the king. So here it doesn't give the full details, but in the other Puranas the story is filled out. His wife did forbade him to do that, said, no, he's a Brahmana, he shouldn't curse a Brahmana, just tolerate it. But he already had the water in his hand. You know, he was already surcharged with all the potency to curse and create some very bad reaction for Vishishtamuni. So his wife said, just throw it on your feet. So he kind of took the own reaction for his curse, and that water made his feet black, which is the why he was called Kalmashapada, black feet, polluted feet. The cursing water that he had in his hand, which he was going to throw at Vishishta, his wife advised him don't do it, so he threw it on his own feet, and therefore his feet became polluted, or Kalmashapada. And then he took the form of a Rakshasa. So a little bit unfortunate incident for this king. And now he's caught this Brahmana to eat him. And the Brahmana's wife is very piteously pleading for the life of her husband. And she'll speak on for a few more verses, giving different arguments why Kalmashapada should not eat the Brahmana. But unfortunately, because his mentality has been polluted by the curse, he wasn't able to restrain himself, and he devours the Brahmana. And then he gets another curse from the wife of the Brahmana, which we will leave for future speakers. But anyway, the point I was trying to emphasize is that as Vaishnavas, the Bhagavatam is our number one reference. And if we see things in other scriptures, we hear other stories that may not tally with the Bhagavatam version, we should be faithful to the Bhagavatam and take that as our prime evidence, as the Amala Pramana. So there are various examples of perhaps different versions of these stories. And sometimes one of the explanations is Kalpabheda. Kalpabheda is a very useful tool to have. Kalpabheda literally means the difference in the Kalpa. So many of these pastimes, they happen in every Kalpa, in every day of Brahma, but there may be some slight differences. So if some story seems a little different in some Purana, one of the explanations can be Kalpabheda, that actually in that Kalpa, the pastime unfolded a little differently. So that's one explanation. Another explanation is that because Bhagavatam is focusing on the topmost spiritual benefit, therefore it doesn't give much emphasis or importance or even necessarily describe the stories which are not very spiritually connected. And perhaps the first instance of this would be in the first canto, when the actual story of Bhagavatam starts in the seventh chapter, when Siddha Goswami starts describing what happened after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And the reference that Ashwatthama, he killed the five sons of Draupadi while they were sleeping. So Bhagavatam just gives that much information on this incident, whereas in Mahabharata there's a huge chapter describing in great detail how Ashwatthama entered the camp of the Pandavas at night, even though he was discouraged to do so by his seniors, and how Lord Shiva stopped him and then empowered him actually to kill all the remaining soldiers in the Pandava camp, and he even gave them a sword, and Ashwatthama's body was charged with the power of Lord Shiva. So he was able to enter and slaughter all the remaining warriors that were sleeping very peacefully, thinking the battle is over, the Duryodhana has been defeated, now we've survived 18 days. You know, there were still a few thousand soldiers on the Pandavas' side left, and some of the great heroes still, Drishtadyumna and Shikhandi and the Pandavas' sons by Draupadi. But Ashwatthama killed all of them. And there's a great detailed description in Mahabharata, very bloodthirsty description of how he killed each and every one of those personalities, how some of them fought back, how others were just confused and started killing each other. And those who tried to run away were killed at the gate by Kripacharya and Kritavarma. So it's a very kind of ghastly description. But Bhagavatam just gives one brief mention, doesn't give the details. In Mahabharata, it says at first they were sleeping, then they tried to fight back, but they were all kind of under the influence of time. They were all killed by Ashwatthama. So like that, there are other such differences, and a very major one which we just covered in the last chapter was mentioned a couple of times, is the sons of Sagara were burnt. How they were burnt? Were they burnt by Kapila Muni's power? Did he, you know, with his mystic shakti, did he burn them all because they were trying to kill him? It would be a valid reason to kill them. They're all coming to attack him and kill him for no reason. Indra had stolen the horse and kept it near Kapila Muni's ashram. And the sons of Sagara assumed that Kapila Muni had stolen the horse, so they were ready to kill him, even though he's a great Brahmana, he's incarnation of the Lord. So it would be very justified for him to, in self-defense, destroy those who are trying to kill him. And that's the general understanding, is that Kapila Muni chanted some mantra, and from his eyes, you know, the flames shot out and burnt these 60,000 sons. And that's what most Hindus who know the story will have been taught to understand, you know, to believe. But Bhagavatam very specifically says that no, Kapila Dev is pure goodness. He's not influenced by such qualities of anger. And actually, it was the heat in the body of the sons of Sagara from their, you know, their own anger, and their bodily heat increased, and they themselves self-immolated. You know, they, like Sati, created the body, the fire out of her body and burnt herself. This was involuntary self-immolation. They just combusted and burned to ashes. So Bhagavatam, in the previous chapter, specifically, Shukadeva Goswami says that this was not the work of Kapila Muni, but this was the heat of the sons of Sagara consumed their own bodies. So it's an important, subtle, small, but important point to distinguish, that Bhagavatam gives the spiritual purport to these stories. Lord Chaitanya's pastimes also, we see sometimes there may be some misunderstanding, or someone is not quite sure of some of the philosophical background of certain pastimes. Specifically, I'm thinking of a story when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India. So he came to this river Kritamala and was taking his bath, and one Brahmana met Lord Chaitanya, and he invited him, "Well, please come to my house for prasad." So Lord Chaitanya is a sannyasi. He didn't have any plans for eating or sleeping. They were just traveling openly, and they would get invited here and there. As a sannyasi, it was a very attractive proposition to invite a sannyasi to your house. So this Brahmana, who was a great devotee of Lord Ram, he said, "Please come and have lunch at my place." So Lord Chaitanya took his bath, and he came to the Brahmin's house. So when he got there, he saw the Brahmin hadn't cooked anything. It's a little unusual. And the Brahmin was sitting there looking very sad. And Lord Chaitanya said, "My dear sir, it's already time. What's happening?" And the Brahmin said, "Oh, you know, we're living in the forest now. It's very hard to find good ingredients." Okay. It was a little bit kind of a cryptic answer. Then he went on to say that when Lakshman brings the fruits and roots and vegetables, then Sita will cook. And then Lord Chaitanya understood that, oh, this Brahman is totally absorbed in thoughts of Lord Ram. He's actually envisioning the pastimes of Lord Ram, and he's imagining that Sita is going to come and bring some, Lakshman is going to come and Sita will cook, and then Lord Chaitanya will eat. And then suddenly the Brahman kind of snapped out of his meditation. He said, oh, I'm sorry, I'll cook now. And he cooked up something very quickly. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita says it was about 3 o'clock by the time the lunch was ready and Lord Chaitanya ate. And even after the lunch, Lord Chaitanya saw that this Brahmana is still very depressed and he's not eating himself. So Lord Chaitanya asked him, what's up? You know, why are you so sad? Why are you so depressed? Why aren't you eating? Tell me. And the Brahmana said, I can't even maintain my life. I don't want to live. I just want to give up my body. When I think that Srimati Sita Devi, who's a supreme personality of, you know, the wife of the Supreme Lord, fully spiritual, and she's been kidnapped and grabbed and dragged off by this demon Ravana, I just feel so sad, and I just feel like I should leave my body. Somehow I'm not dying, but I feel like I should just die in thinking of this, you know, horrible incident. So Lord Chaitanya pacified him and said, no, you're a great scholar. You should think about this carefully. A demon like Ravana wouldn't even be able to see Sita Devi, who is fully spiritual. What to speak of touch her? And he quoted some verses to support his argument. So the spiritual reality is so far beyond material purview. He wouldn't even be able to see Lord Sita. So don't worry. Ravana wasn't able to take Sita. Actually, it was some illusionary form of Sita that Ravana took, and he was cheated in that way. So Brahmana was encouraged, said, okay, that makes sense, you know, and he agreed to eat and he agreed to live also. So Lord Chaitanya left after that and he traveled a couple more places, and then he came to Rameshwaram, which is it's actually an island where it's believed that Lord Ram started constructing the bridge to Lanka, and there's a very big temple of Lord Shiva there. So Lord Chaitanya went to take darshan of the temple, and there were many brahmanas. I guess there was a class going on outside, or they were chanting verses. So Lord Chaitanya sat to listen. This is the culture of the temple life, that there would be brahmanas reciting mantras or reciting shastra. So it was a Kurma Purana, and it was exactly that same story of Sita Devi. So Lord Chaitanya was listening how the Kurma Purana describes that when Ravana came to take Sita, Sita disappeared, and she went with Agni, demigod of fire. And then later on she stayed with Parvati. Sita and Parvati were staying together. And then there was a Maya Sita, or sometimes called Maya Sita, sometimes called Chaya Sita. Chaya means shadow. An illusory form of Sita was taken by Ravana. So the entire time that Sita was kept at Lanka, actually wasn't the real Sita, it was a Maya Sita. The real Sita was not able to be touched by Ravana. So when Lord Chaitanya heard this, the actual original reference, he was very happy. And some places they say says he asked the brahmanas for their copy of the manuscript, and says he tore off that page, or he copied the page. And he thought, you know, I need to show this to this brahmana, Ramdas Vipra, the devotee of Lord Ram. So Lord Chaitanya, after visiting Rameshwaram, he went all the way back to, actually it was Madurai. So I was wondering, how far is it from Rameshwaram to Madurai? It was 150 kilometers. So remember, this is before the days of Indian railways. Lord Chaitanya is walking. So he went backwards 150 kilometers. And according to Google directions, it takes 23 hours to walk that far. That's nonstop. So assuming he stopped for the night, probably three, four days to walk that far. Just to show the Brahmana these verses. And I was really reflecting that, you know, we hear about Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But this is like an uncommon mercy, that he would walk 3-4 days perhaps just to show these verses to the Brahmana. So he went back all the way to Madurai, to the Brahmin's house, and said, remember I was telling you how Ravana couldn't have kidnapped Sita? Here is the proof. And he showed him the exact shlokas from the Kurma Purana. And the Brahmana was happy. He started crying in ecstasy and said, you know, I believe that you are Lord Ram himself. You have come to me as a sannyasi, and you have saved my life in this way. And he's saying, that day, you know, when you came the previous time, I couldn't cook very nicely. Please, you stay here. Now I'll cook a big feast for your lunch. I'll be able to serve you properly. So then he cooked very nicely and served Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya even spent the night in his house and then continued on his journey. So he actually went backwards, more or less backwards, 2-3 days walking. And again, he had to make up that distance just to show the brahmana these shlokas. So in this way, the brahmana's misunderstanding of the pastime that Ravana was able to take Sita was clarified by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya already had told him, but when he found the shastric reference to back up his statements, then he walked all those days back just to give that shastric reference to back up his point for the brahmana. So that was a very interesting related point to this, how the Bhagavatam is giving the true purport of some of these pastimes. Similarly, in Mahabharata, it says that when Yudhishthira Maharaj told the lie that Dronacharya has been killed, therefore he had to touch the ground. But the Vaishnava purport to that pastime is that, which Madhvacharya explains, that actually Yudhishthira's fault was that he didn't want to tell the lie. When Krishna told him to tell the lie, he was hesitating, and therefore he got some reaction for that. Not that because he told the lie. Often in India, people think that Krishna is immoral. He told Yudhishthira to lie, and therefore Yudhishthira had to suffer. But actually, Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his orders are the supreme dharma. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So when the Lord himself is telling you to do something, the secondary considerations like morality and truthfulness are not to be considered. So unless we hear from our acharyas or hear from Bhagavatam, it's very easy to be misunderstand Krishna's personality. And therefore in India, many people think Krishna is a thief, Krishna is a womanizer, Krishna is a liar. And then they're not able to actually understand the true personality of Krishna and his spiritual nature. Just like we'll soon be studying 10th canto. So if someone reads 10th canto without understanding the other 9 cantos, without seeing Krishna's supreme position, then there's the possibility of misunderstanding the 10th canto. Therefore, all the philosophy is given up in the first 9 cantos, and then Krishna appears towards the end of the 9th canto, and the pastimes of Krishna are unfolded in the 10th canto. So therefore, one has to first understand Krishna's personality, and then one can appreciate his pastimes. Otherwise, people make offenses and consider Krishna all sorts of, you know, doing all sorts of unsavory activities. So the other major point covered here is Prabhupada talks in the purport about the importance of the human form of life. So he quotes the song from Narottam Das Thakur, how the facility is given in the human form to understand the Lord, even to understand dharma. These days in the back road, in the fields, you'll see the cows from the goshala grazing. Sometimes they're crossing over the road and we have to wait for them. I was just having like a vision of the cows coming upstairs here to listen to Bhagavatam. But we don't see that. I mean, we don't see animals that gather to hear spiritual discourses. That's only, facility is only there for the humans. So the human form of life, the opportunity it provides to break out of the cycle of birth and death, that's not given in the other species of life. There are some exceptional cases where some animal may get special mercy and be able to go back to Godhead. But generally, that's not the case. Generally, it's the human, by their intelligence, by studying the Shastra, by association, they can access Krishna consciousness and they can go back to Godhead. So therefore, even it's said that even the residents of heaven and the residents of hell, they desire human birth because through the human birth, one can get an opportunity to go back to Godhead. In the 11th canto, Krishna describes this point to Uddhava, and he also gives a nice verse. Nrideham adhyam sulabham sudullabham plavam vikalpam gurukarnadharam mayanukulyaiva nabhasviteritam puman bhavabdim nateretsa atmaha. So we've heard the description how the samsara is compared to an ocean. So the human body in that verse is compared to the suitable boat for crossing over the ocean of samsara. And Krishna is speaking the verse himself. He says that I'm giving the favorable breezes. By me, by the Shastra, I'm giving the favorable breezes which will push that boat across the ocean of samsara. And the spiritual master is the captain, Guru Karnadharam. So it's a very nice analogy. The human form of life is the boat, the guru is the captain, and the Lord is sending favorable breezes in the form of the Shastras for us to be able to cross over the ocean of samsara. So the importance of human form of life is a very common point in Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj also, when he first starts preaching to his classmates, his first verse he says is, Komara acharet prakyo dharman bhagavataniha turlabham manusham janma tatapyadhruvam arthadam. The human form of life is very rare, but it can give a very great arthadam. It's full of meaning, it's full of purpose. Therefore, from the very young age, Prahlad was a 5-6-year-old child and his classmates were of the same age, from this very young age we should take up spiritual life because that is the purpose of human life. Dharman bhagavataniha. And it's very rare to attain the human form of life, therefore it shouldn't be wasted. If you have a human birth but you're simply doing animal activities, then that is simply a waste of time. There's one King Sudarshana who is described in the Hitopadesh. So he had very unruly sons. So this is always a great worry for the kings. And once he heard some brahmana chanting some verses, the verse was saying that if one is not shastra chakshush, if you don't see through the eyes of the scripture, then you're as good as blind. And that youth and wealth and power and being inconsiderate, any one of these four things can cause the downfall of a man. And if someone has all four of these, then it's very dangerous. So hearing these verses, the king was reminded that his sons had all of these things. They were young, they were powerful, they were wealthy, and they didn't care about others. And therefore, their situation would be very precarious. So during the king's introspection, he was wondering what to do about his sons. So he also spoke one famous verse, which Prabhupada quotes many, many times, and which all of us are familiar with. Ahari nidra bhayamaitunam cha sumanam etat pashubhinaranam dharmo hitesham matiko visesho dharmena hina pashubhisamana. So the famous verse that Prabhupada quotes many times, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, these are the four activities common to humans and animals. But the one distinctive opportunity for the humans is dharma. Religious activity, spiritual activity, and dharmena hina pashubhisamana. If a human being is dharmahina, if he's atheistic, if he's not cultivating dharma, spiritual life, then his life is as good as that of an animal. And it's a very simple and powerful verse. So later on, the story goes on, the king, he engaged one brahmana to teach his sons through stories to bring them to the right path. That's called the Hitopadesh. It's an interesting secondary scripture that gives many moralistic and ethical instructions. And the king's sons were in that way brought to the path of dharma. So path of dharma is one thing, but as Prabhupada talks about in this purport, that beyond the dharma leads to artha, kama and moksha, and interestingly Prabhupada talks about beyond that moksha even, if one is properly regulated, he makes further progress after liberation. So after moksha, what is the status? The goal is to engage in the service of Radha and Krishna. So Mahabharata and such scriptures, other Puranas, they deal maybe up to moksha. But Srimad Bhagavatam gives the Panchama Purushartha, the engagement in the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, understanding the purports to these pastimes through the eyes of Srimad Bhagavatam and our acharyas, then we can be firmly situated on this path of Krishna consciousness and fully take advantage of our human form of birth. So any questions or comments? Yes. The back.
Uh, Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the nice class. So we see that Vasishtha Muni, without realizing that it was not the king but somebody else, he just went ahead and cursed him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a great Vaishnava. And the king also was almost ready to curse him, and he's a Brahmana too. So, and throughout the Bhagavatam we see like these curses happening to each other. So how do we understand this? Usually the Vaishnava we are supposed to tolerate and forgive. So, and we also see in the devotee community that sometimes somebody could curse another devotee because the devotee made them unhappy. So how do we understand this? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean this is the lesson to learn, that you know, we should control our anger, we should find out the facts before responding. In the digital age, it's very easy to shoot off an email or make a comment online and regret it later. So you should always restrain yourself and think about responding or reacting. And Vasishtha Muni, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if he would be classified as a pure Vaishnava. He's a great personality. He was the spiritual master of Maharaj Dasharath, so he saw Lord Ram's pastimes also. His name is throughout the Shastras. But interesting, last time I gave class in September, he'd also cursed he'd cursed his disciple Prishadra, you know, for also not a major offense or something that happened by mistake. So, and you see in this verse, he had to take 12 years off to purify himself for the sin of cursing. You know, so he understood he wrongly cursed the king, and therefore he did 12 years of tapasya. So I think if he'd taken a few minutes to understand the whole situation, he could have saved himself 12 years of, you know, labor. So that's the saying in English, act in haste, repent in leisure. So he should have really taken his time and understood that it wasn't the king, it was the Rakshasa. The king has a little responsibility, of course, but in this case, it was actually the Rakshasa trying to get revenge of the king. So they played right into the hands of the Rakshasa, and the king was cursed, and you know that was what the Rakshasa was trying to accomplish. So yeah, we should be very careful of, especially in the community of Vaishnavas, to react or act harshly. Even if there's some provocation, it's much better to tolerate and take the humble position, at least for some time, to understand what's the real situation, rather than responding and having to regret doing that later on. So it's a good lesson for us to, even though great personalities like Vasishtha Muni, Vishvamitra is another one, who Durvasa, you know, they're all great personalities, but their anger is, you know, often erupts, and we saw recently Ambarish Maharaj being cursed by Durvasa, also not for valid reasons. So it seems that controlling anger is a very crucial aspect, that we have to curb that tendency to be angry, especially if we're angry among the Vaishnava community. You know, and then there was also the aspect of Vaishnava aparad will be considered. So really better to take it easy and take the humble position, not respond, or do it in a very Vaishnav way if there's some reason for provocation. I think that's the lesson we can learn from these great personalities. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna, Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanandini.